everyone. You're listening to the Aviation Reporter, your podcast about everything related to airports, airlines, and aviation industry. In this episode, in collaboration with Emma Systems, you will hear a fascinating interview with Jonathan Wood. He is the Vice President Renewable Aviation at Neste. We're going to have a great discussion with Jean-Luc Devichat. Let's give the floor to them.
Welcome to my podcast, Jonathan Wood. Thank you for accepting the invite. Today, we would like to talk about sustainable fuels, because of course everybody understands that there are a lot of challenges within the aviation industry, and what your company is doing is a very interesting aspect, and that's what I wanted to highlight during this podcast. So of course I will not do most of the talking, unlike some other podcasts. I will let you do the talking, and I will just guide you through the podcast with some of the questions I had prepared. And I think the most normal question we always start with is to introduce yourself, your function within Neste, but of course also give us a bit of background on the company. If you could do that, that would be a nice way to kick off the podcast.
All right. Great, Jean-Luc, thanks for the introduction, and thanks for the opportunity to talk together about the challenge that the aviation industry has to deliver on our overall societal climate change agenda and decarbonization and sustainability in particular. So I'm working now for a company called Neste, which is the global leader in the supply of renewable fuels and circular solutions. Started as a traditional oil refining and marketing company in Finland, and then 25 years ago made the decision when it learned that it saw that it had some leading expertise in the utilization of waste and difficult to waste raw materials and other difficult to handle raw materials to convert them into renewable fuels, and has really spent the last 20 years building a business to bring that to market, first for renewable road transport fuels or renewable diesel, and now also for renewable aviation fuel, or SAF, sustainable aviation fuel as it's typically known, as well as also renewable feedstocks for the chemicals industry, and has invested significantly to build a production and a production platform and raw material sourcing activity that has enabled us now to start producing and bringing the product to market also for the aviation sector. And we've got big plans to grow, but obviously the industry also has a real imperative to deliver on decarbonization, and sustainable aviation fuel, I think, is well recognized as being one of the main levers to achieve that. I myself joined, having been in the energy business all my career, I joined when it was when the new sustainable aviation fuel business unit was established 3.5 years ago, based here in Amsterdam, where we've got our global leadership team based for the aviation business. I've been responsible for building the business in the EMEA, Europe, Middle East, Africa region, and have now got a role responsible for basically all of our global commercial and technical activities. And it's quite frankly a great opportunity. It's a challenge we all need to step up to, but also it's a great opportunity to build a new business and build, above all, the market, and make everybody believe this can be done.
Perfect. Very nice introduction. So thank you very much for that, Jonathan. I wanted to kick it off with the first real question around sustainable fuels, because of course, whatever you see, and also I think recently IATA stated that sustainable fuels are really the answer to compensate for the CO2 emissions from airplanes. I mean, what is your opinion about that, and how do you see that going forward?
Well, firstly, yes, basically, we as Neste agree with that outlook. I mean, what's certainly, despite COVID, been evident over the last 3 years is there's been increasing recognition of the need to decarbonize. There's a lot of alignment in the value chain across, or in the ecosystem, with the different players, be they airlines, airports, producers, technology providers, OEMs, i.e. the aircraft manufacturers and engine manufacturers, all very much trying to find pathways to deliver the lower carbon emissions that we need to aim for. And the positive thing last year was that IATA aligned around a net zero target by 2050. Previously, the industry had a target of 50% reduction by 2050 versus 2005. Now the industry is aligned around net zero, and that was also adopted by the UN Civil Aviation Organization, ICAO, also. So what's absolutely essential for the aviation industry as a global international business is that we get alignment, not just about the direction of travel, but also the regulations and the standards by which we all operate, which is a challenge, to be frank, and something we need to work on further. But what's also important to remember is, yes, sustainable aviation fuel is part of the solution, probably going to deliver, if you follow the IATA report, but many reports are similarly indicating roughly 2/3 of the decarbonization needs to be delivered by or through the use of sustainable aviation fuels, but indeed more efficient and new aircraft propulsion technologies are a key enabler. Then you've got also operational efficiency and better route planning and management, also reduction in travel. Although the aviation industry, despite COVID or global financial crises or the like, has typically since the middle of the last century been on a growth path of approximately 5% per annum, or roughly doubling every 15 years. The growth rates may be slightly lower in North America and Europe, but obviously the emerging non-OECD countries are probably showing higher growth. So we've got a real challenge to as an industry. And whilst the industry may be only 2 or 3% of global carbon emissions today in our society, if we don't bend the curve, if we don't turn that trajectory and start to reduce emissions, the share of the aviation industry of globally of our society's emissions will climb to 20% or more. We've really got to move forward. We're well aligned. Sustainable aviation fuel, as I say, is generally seen to contribute approximately 2/3 of the decarbonisation. You know, changing aircraft, typically aircraft have a 20-year plus lifetime. So obviously we've got to work with the fleet of aircraft that are out there at the moment. Hydrogen propulsion is a possibility for the future, as is electric. But typically, well, in the case of hydrogen, I think we've got a long way to go still to prove it, to understand if it can be done feasibly, economically. And in the case of electric, that's probably more suitable for shorter haul, smaller aircraft. So coming back to the bulk of the aviation business is all about commercial passenger aircraft, mid to long haul, the mid and long haul commercial aircraft. How do we decarbonize them? And that's where SAF comes in. What is sustainable aviation fuel? It is a liquid hydrocarbon fuel that's got the energy density that's required to give the power that you need to take off. So we need to find ways of recycling the carbon rather than digging more out of the ground. And that's fundamentally what SAF is all about. We're currently using waste bio-based feedstocks or raw materials and converting them back into a fuel hydrocarbon. There are future production technologies which will need to be properly scaled up, which will enable us to expand the renewable waste raw materials that we use, be it agricultural and forestry waste, be it also plants that are oil-bearing plants that are grown on land that's otherwise not used. We also have the possibility of using municipal solid waste or algae. And algae, there are companies working on the production technology for that. And ultimately, what's the so-called power-to-liquid production technology, where we take renewable power, and I stress it has to be renewable, obviously, to convert or to extract hydrogen from water and then combine it with carbon either that's captured from other emissions or indeed from the air's atmosphere. But significant amounts of renewable power are required for that. So what you've got here is effectively a pathway where we've got established production technologies, the so-called HEFA or hydrotreated esters and fatty acids technology that we're using at the moment to use waste bio-based waste materials like used cooking oil. But then we see these other production technologies coming on stream. We need to make them technologically ready and commercially deliverable so that we can build the production platform globally and tap into other feedstock sources so that indeed we can see a pathway ultimately to fully replacing the fossil-based jet fuel that's currently being produced with basically renewable or recycled hydrocarbons. We shouldn't be betting on one technology. We need to be working on them all, and then ultimately we'll see which are the most scalable and the most economic. That's where also policy is super important here, because these fuels do cost more than the current fossil jet fuel. So how do we promote the use of SAF when it costs more, by airlines who obviously are working on wafer thin margins? And that's where policies which ensure a level playing field for all the airlines in a given region, such as we're seeing now in the EU with the proposed requirement for a gradually increasing share of all fuel to be renewable or SAF. We also are seeing incentives and both for the users, but also for the project developers to help them get their technologies to a point where they're ready to be scaled up. And of course, it's important if we want to, because this is a global industry and you've got airlines competing with one another from different regions, the more that we can have a common set of policies and also standards by which we assess the carbon reduction that SAF is delivering, the better for everybody. Because what the airline industry naturally is always concerned about is not being competitively disadvantaged versus others in the industry. So this is requiring policy to help us move forward, stimulate the demand, but also the supply, and achieve that common approach globally. And that will then hopefully enable us to scale up and on the one side of the coin with learning benefits and scale economies, mitigate the higher cost. And on the other side of the coin, we need to recognize that fossil jet fuel, the true carbon cost of fossil jet fuel, needs to be recognized. So whilst there is a higher cost that needs to be funded ultimately by the end user, hopefully the as we scale up and develop these new technologies, the cost difference will gradually shrink versus the true cost of fossil jet fuel.
Now, you mentioned at several occasions, you mentioned standards. Are there no standards for SAF? Is this an issue in the industry to really make sure that there is a standard, or that we keep a specific standard?
Well, so the first thing is we need to be clear on what raw materials are truly achieving the end objective of both reducing the net emissions, but also not causing unintended consequences, be it deforestation, impact on biodiversity, or potentially even competing with land that would otherwise be used for food crops. So that's the start point. We need a common understanding as to which raw materials are truly delivering the decarbonization in a way that's acceptable to society. Then there's the aspect of to what extent are these raw materials and production technologies truly delivering a carbon reduction, and how much of a carbon reduction versus the fossil jet fuel equivalent. If we want to halve, for example, by 2035 or 2040 our emissions, then we've got to be sure that we've got a common way of measuring that, so that we can actually track our progress. What we have at the moment are organizations which are authorized to certify independently or verify independently that companies like Neste and others, when we supply SAF, they verify, looking at the supply chain, the production process, what the emission reduction is versus the fossil jet fuel equivalent. And that's then documentation that we can provide to the authorities if we're trying to meet a mandate obligation, or the end customer, if they're paying for that emission reduction, then they've got independently verified documentation to say, yes, you have actually got what you paid for, and you have achieved a 100 tons worth of carbon emission reduction versus what you would have otherwise paid if you caused if you had been flying all the year round on a particular route, for example. So this is why the standards around the feedstocks, the carbon accounting, if you like, having common standards is really important. And in due course, I think we'll find that sustainability and environmental performance, and in particular carbon accounting, will become like financial accounting. There'll be rules around it, and you'll have to have it audited so that your financial company reports, but equally your offer to your end customers is verified as being what you said it was. Because when you fly on a plane, you don't even see the fuel. And even if you did see the fuel, you wouldn't recognize a difference. So there's got to be some kind of assurance here that when you pay for something, that you are getting what you paid for.
No, that's, I think, I didn't even really think about standardization in sustainable fuels. But yes, you're right. It's like, where does it come from? And are we not doing the wrong things just to get to the sustainable fuels? I think these are really very critical questions. What I also liked about your statement was that you make that sustainable fuels is alone is not the answer. It's a mix of things. Like you said, it's more fuel efficient airplanes. And if you read the reports of Boeing and Airbus, I mean, they count on the fact that 75% of all the planes will have to be replaced by more fuel efficient airplanes. So I think that's a very good statement. And also, of course, the operational efficiency at airports. I think a lot of fuel burn is still happening because the plane is taxiing too long or whatever. So a lot of inefficiencies that can be dealt with. No, I agree.
Jean-Luc, if I may just add a couple of comments. So it's really important that the listeners understand we're still putting a liquid hydrocarbon fuel in aircraft so that our emissions when it's burnt, but the reason why it's achieving the reduction versus the fossil fuel equivalent is because we're effectively converting the carbon that's in the atmosphere through plants effectively. We're effectively recycling what's in the ecosystem rather than adding to it by digging it out of the ground. That's point one. And the other point just to mention is some of your listeners may be aware that there's a very strict approval process around the use of SAF. Obviously, safety is paramount in the industry, and therefore any fuel has to go through a rigorous checking and approval, testing and approval process with the aircraft and engine manufacturers, the OEMs as we like to call them, and they through an international industry body called the ASTM organization approve the fuels. And at the moment, renewable jet fuel or SAF is only approved up to 50% mix or blend. So all the SAF that we're supplying has to be blended with also fossil jet fuel to meet certain technical product specification parameters and boundaries. So one of the tasks we've also got to do, it's not a problem right now where SAF is still less than 1% of total demand, but by the end of the decade, you know, North America and the UK the US and UK are targeting 10%, many airlines are targeting 10%, and the latest policy proposals in the EU are targeting 6%, but let's see, maybe that will in due course be increased. Either way, we've got a way to go before we hit the 50% barrier, but we've got to solve that. And as we've just indicated, you know, aircraft typically have a 20 to 30 year lifetime. So we've got to be working on that right now with the OEMs in order to make sure that we can develop a fuel type that can be used up to 100% pure neat without blending it with fossil jet fuel. And that's another great example where we all need to be working together, producers and technology providers together with the OEMs, to find a pathway to 100% SAF utilization.
Is that what you see as the trend we should be focusing on, is to go for the 100%? And
as has been implied by what we've discussed so far on this podcast, you know, the beauty of SAF is it's a so-called drop-in fuel. You can use it currently only blended up to a 50% ratio, but as I've just said, hopefully we'll get to 100% approval of 100% pure SAF utilization in our existing aircraft, existing storage tanks at the airports, the existing infrastructure in the supply chain, and that's a huge enabler. If we can't then putting it the other way, if we were unable to find a way to approve 100% SAF utilization, then what that would mean is that we would have to change the aircraft and potentially the infrastructure. And the idea of having some aircraft that can accept SAF and some that can't and can only accept a different product, it becomes incredibly difficult to manage operationally, as well as costing a lot more. So the game definitely has to be, the objective has to be to find a pathway where producers can produce a product that can be used by the aircraft to 100% with the existing infrastructure, and that it can, we then have that gradual transition to a higher percentage blend.
Maybe one question, and of course, this is a question I didn't put on my paper, so you're free to just skip it. But I mean, Neste has been kind of diving into this topic from the early days, let's say, and other companies have been completely missing. I have been at least not so persistent on the importance. Is this for Neste a key solution for the future? Can I ask you that? Is how does Neste see this part of the business?
Well, so Neste has definitely taken a lead on this with its production technology know-how, and is now scaling up really, really rapidly. So I mentioned earlier that SAF was less than well under 1% of global aviation fuel demand. We've got investments underway that we made decisions on 3 or 4 years ago. And that's how long it takes to bring these plants up. We've got production capacity coming on stream, which will increase our SAF production capacity from 100,000 tons to 1.5 million tons in the next 12 months. And actually, we've made other decisions which will further grow that to over 2 million tons. That sounds like an awful lot, and it is when you put it in the context of Europe, for example. The European, EU and UK mandates could be fully met up until 2029 alone by Neste's production capacity. Obviously, we need to go beyond that, and this is a global business, not a European business. Other players and competitors need to invest in production capacity with the existing HEFA-based production technology, as well as the future technology, as will Neste. But this is a huge investment. It's like one example of the energy transition that we as a society globally are having to go through. And it's going to cost not billions, it's going to cost hundreds and hundreds of billions to build and convert our refining production capacity to make renewable jet fuel or SAF. And then, as I've indicated, you know, it's not just the production of the SAF itself. You've got to have the renewable power behind that, so that you're talking many more hundreds of billions to expand the renewable power capacity that we need, not just for the production of SAF, but all the other activities that we've got going on, whether it's road transport fuels, EV, electric vehicles, or other usages of renewable power. So it's a huge multi-trillion dollar undertaking. Now, Neste is very focused. We've got three businesses: renewable road transport, renewable aviation, and renewable chemicals. The oil majors are going to take longer to evolve. I mean, they've got huge fossil fuel businesses, and we can't just walk away from that tomorrow as a society. But they are putting in billions into renewable or into the energy transition. But they also have, whilst they're making a lot more money than Neste does, they're much larger companies with bigger balance sheets, they also ultimately have to make choices. So there may be, you know, whether it's green hydrogen, whether it's wind power, whether it's solar power, they've got a whole host of areas to look at. So I would just say that I'm sure that they will, and some have announced the intent to invest, and I believe some investments are now underway, but they have been they've not taken a leadership position in terms of the production and development of production capacity for SAF. I'm sure they'll come, but they're not as focused, maybe. Neste is extremely focused on three sectors and on the technology know-how it's got, whereas, you know, the oil majors have the technology capability, but they've got a much broader portfolio to make choices around. So I'm not being critical. They have got to invest big time. They are investing big time, but Neste has taken bolder decisions earlier to get ahead here, because we can't afford to wait. Yeah. I mean, everybody says, well, let's wait for the perfect solution. Well, guess what? By 2030, we'll be well past, in all likelihood, the 1.5 degree Paris target. So we can't afford to wait for the perfect solution.
No, true. No, great. I mean, that's a very nice kind of, let's say, ending of the podcast. I think that's a very nice statement you made. And I think you gave a very good overview of where we are and what your company is doing. So thank you very much for that. Very interesting inputs for our readers and listeners, mostly listeners. And thank you so much for joining us today in this podcast, Jonathan.
Thanks a lot, Jean-Luc. A pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for joining us today. This podcast has been brought to you by EMA Systems. EMA helps airports to optimize their ground operations by correlating real-time data through AI, including ACDM. You can visit www.ema.euro to find out more.